but his mouth soft and red. It is this one. Without one word to deny himself, Yuen let himself be bound, his hands behind his back, and no one could stay the matter. No, although his old uncle wept and trembled, and though the lady came up beseeching and said in her grave, sure way, "You are mistaken. This lad is no revolutionist. I can swear for him. He is a studious, careful lad, my son, who has never taken any part in all this cause." But the man only laughed coarsely, and one great round-faced soldier cried out, "Ah, lady, mothers never know their sons. To know a man, one must ask the maid, never his mother. And the maid gave his name and the number of this very house, and told his looks exactly. Aye, she knew his looks very well, didn't she? I swear she knows his every look. And she said he was the greatest rebel of them all. Yes, she was so bold and angry at first, and then she grew silent for a while, and then she gave his name of her own will, without a moment's torture for it." Then Yuen saw the lady look dazed at this, as at a thing she did not understand at all. He could say nothing. He kept silent, but in his heart he thought dully to himself, "And so her love turned into hating. She could not bind me by her love. Her hate binds me fast enough." And thus must he let himself be led away. Chapter 12. Even at that moment Yuen feared with every certainty that he must die. These latter days, though it was never public, yet he knew the end of all such as were known to have been joined to the cause was death. And no proof could be surer than this of his guilt, that the maid herself had given his name. Yet though he told himself so, that word, death, could not seem real to him. Not even when he was thrust into a prison cell, full of other youths like himself, and not when the guard shouted at him when he stumbled on the threshold because it was so dark, "Aye, pick yourself up now, but tomorrow others must do it for you." Even then he could not understand the meaning of the word. The guard's words struck into his heart like the bullets waiting in the guns for tomorrow. And yet Yuen could take thought to look through the dimness of that crowded cell, and be eased because he saw none in it but men, and not one woman. He could think, "I can bear to die better than I could bear to see her here and have her know I am to die, and have her know she has me after all." This thing remained an ease to him. All had come about so quickly Yuen could not but believe that somehow he would be saved from here. At first he thought that any moment he would be saved. He trusted very much the lady, his mother, and the more he thought, the more confident he was that she would think how to save him. The first hours he so believed, and the more because he felt, as he looked about upon his fellows, that he was much better than any of them, and they looked poor and less wise than he, and of families of less wealth and influence. But after a while the darkness fell completely black, and in the black silence they all sat or lay upon the earthen floor. For none spoke, lest out of their own mouths they be committed by some word which might confirm their guilt. And each man feared the other, and so long as face could see even the dim shape of face, there was no sound except the movement of a body changing its position, or some such voiceless sound. Then night fell, when none could see another's face, and the darkness seemed to shut each into his own cell, and a first voice cried softly, "Oh, my mother! Oh, my mother!" and broke into desperate weeping. This weeping was very hard to bear, for each felt it might be his own self weeping, and a louder voice cried out, very loud and surly, "Be silent! What child is it who cries for its mother? I am a loyal member. I killed my own mother, and my brother killed our father, and we know no parents but the cause. Eh, brother?" And another voice out of the darkness answered, twin to that voice, "Yes, I did it." And the first voice said, "Are we sorry?" And the second sneered and answered again, "Though I had a score of fathers, I would gladly kill them all." And another cried, emboldened, "Aye, those old men and women, they only breed us to make sure they have servants for their old age to keep them warmed and fed." But the first, softest voice moaned on most steadily.
"Oh, my mother! Oh, my mother!"
As though the one who cried these words heard nothing. But at last, as deep night wore on, even such cries must be stilled. Yuan had not spoken once while others spoke, but after they were quiet, the night stayed on and on forever with its deep, exhausted stillness, and he could not bear it. All his hopefulness began to ebb away. He thought the door must open any moment, and a voice shout forth, "Let Wang Yuan come! He is freed!" But no voice called. At last it seemed to Yuan some sound must be made, because he could not bear the stillness. He spent himself in thought. Against his will he thought of all his life and how short it was, and he thought, "If I had obeyed my father, I would not now be here." And yet he could not say, "I wish I had obeyed him." No, when Yuan thought of it, some stubbornness he had made him say honestly, "Yet I do believe he asked a wrong thing of me." And again he thought, "If I had forced myself a little and yielded to that maid." And then again his gorge rose, and he thought honestly, "Yet I did not like to do it." And at last there was nothing else to do than to think ahead to what was to come, since the past was shaped and gone, and he must think of death. Now did he long for any sound to come out of the darkness, and he longed even to hear that lad calling for his mother. But the cell was still as though it were empty, and yet the darkness was not sleeping. No, it was a living, waiting, wakeful darkness, full of terror and of silence. He had not been afraid at first, but in the deep night he grew afraid. Death, which had not been real until this hour, now grew real. He wondered, breathless suddenly, if he would be beheaded, or if he would be shot. These days the gates of inland cities, he had read, were decorated with the heads of the dead young men and women who had joined the cause, for whom the armies of deliverance had not come swiftly enough, so that before the day of battle they were caught by the rulers. He seemed to see his own head, and that it came to him like comfort. "But here in this foreign sort of city they will doubtless shoot us." And then he wondered at himself with a bitter sort of mirth, even, that it could matter to him that he could keep his head on his shoulders when he was dead. Now, even as he sat crouched in this agony these hours through, his back thrust between two walls into a corner, and his feet dragged close to him, so he sat, huddled. The door opened suddenly, and a gray beam of early light fell into the cell and showed the prisoners curled among each other like a heap of worms. The light stirred them into moving, but before any could move to rise, a voice roared forth, "Out with you all!" And soldiers came into the cell, and pushing and prodding with their guns they roused them all. And now roused, that lad began his wailing, "Oh, my mother! Oh, my mother!" and would not leave off even when a soldier smote him hard across the head with his gun's butt. For he moaned these words as though he breathed them, and could not help it, and must draw his life in so. Now, as these staggered forth, in silence otherwise than for this one, each knowing what was coming, and yet dazed, too, a certain soldier held up a lantern that he had, and flashed its light across each face. Yuan was the last of all, and as he came the light flashed across his face. This brightness blinded him suddenly after the long darkness of the night, and in that moment's blindness he felt himself pushed back into the room, and pushed so hard he fell upon the beaten earth. Then instantly he heard the door lock, and there he was, alone and still alive. 3 times did this thing happen, for during that day the cell was filled again with new young men, and again through that night and 2 more nights Yuan must hear them, sometimes silent, and sometimes cursing, and sometimes whimpering, and sometimes crying out in their madness. 3 dawns came, and thrice he was thrust back into the cell alone, and the door locked on him. He was given no food, nor was any moment given him for speech or question. The first day, he could not but have hope, and on the second day he had a lesser hope. But by the third day he was so faint and weak with no food and no water even to drink, that it seemed a little matter to him if he lived or died. That third dawn he could scarcely rise to his feet at all, and his tongue was dry and swollen in his mouth. Yet the soldier shouted at him and prodded him and made him rise, and when Yuan clung to the door frame with his two hands, again the light flashed across his face. But this time he was not thrust into the cell again. Instead, the soldier held him, and when the others were all gone, their doomed and certain way, and when at last not even their footsteps could be heard echoing. The soldier led Yuan by another narrower passage to a place where a small barred door was set, and he drew back the bar and, without a word, thrust Yuan through that door. Then Yuan found himself upon a small, narrow street, such as wind through the inner, more secret parts of any city, and the street was still dim with early dawn, and there was no one in sight. And out of his clouded mind, Yuan could see this thing clearly, that he was free. Somehow he had been freed. Even as he turned his head this way and that to think how he could run, two came near out of the dusk, and Yuan shrank back against the door again. But one of the two was a child, a tall child, and she came running to him and came near and peered at him, and he saw her two eyes, very large and black and eager. And he heard this child call out in a low, fervent voice, "It is he! Here he is! Here he is!" Then the other came near too, and Yuan saw her and knew it was his lady mother. But before he could speak, in spite of all his eagerness to speak and say it was he himself, he felt his body tremble on his feet and seem to melt away, and he suddenly could not see anything, and the child's dark eyes grew larger and blacker, and then faded. From some very far distant place he heard a voice whisper, "Oh, my poor son!" And then he fell and heard and saw no more. When Yuan awoke again, he felt himself upon some moving, swaying thing. He lay in a bed, but this bed rose and fell beneath him, and opening his eyes he saw he was in a small, strange room where he had never been. Someone sat there watching him, beneath a light set in the wall. And when Yuan summoned all his strength to look, he saw this was Sheng, his cousin. And Sheng was watching Yuan too. And when he saw Yuan looking, he rose and smiled his old smile. And now it seemed to Yuan truly the gentlest, sweetest smile a face could have. And he reached to a little table and fetched some hot broth in a bowl there, and he said, soothing Yuan, "Your mother said the moment you awoke I was to give you this, and I have been keeping it hot these 2 hours on a little lamp she gave me." He began to feed Yuan as he might feed a child, and like a child Yuan said not a word. He was so weary and so dazed. He drank the broth down, too weak to wonder how he came here and what this place was, and like a child accepting all that was come about. He only felt the warm liquid very succoring and pleasant to his dry and swollen tongue, and he swallowed it as best he could. But Sheng talked quietly as he dipped the broth up with the spoon, and he said, "I know you wonder where we are and why we are here. We are on a small ship, a ship our uncle merchant has used to carry his goods back and forth to the nearest islands, and by his influence we are on it. We are to go across the nearest seas, and stay in the closest port, and there we are to wait for papers we must have to go on to foreign parts. You are free, Yuan, but at a mighty price. Your mother and my father and my brother have laid hold on every sum they could, and they borrowed much money of our second uncle, and your father was beside himself, and they said he kept groaning how he had been betrayed by a woman, too, and he and his son were done with women this time and forever. And he has given up your marriage, and sent all the money for it, and all he could get, and all these monies together, bought your freedom, and our escape on this ship. High and low, money has been paid." When Sheng said these words, Yuan listened, and yet he was so weak he scarcely could perceive their meaning. He could only feel the ship rise and fall beneath him, and feel the good heat of the food slip down into his starved body. Then Sheng said, suddenly smiling, "Yet I do not know if I could have left happily even in such a case, if I had not known Meng was safe. Ah, he is a clever one, that lad. Look here, I went grieving for him, and my parents were distracted between you and him, and not knowing whether it was worse to know where you were and that you were to be killed, or not know where Meng was and that he might be safe or killed already. Then yesterday, when I was on the street between your home and mine, someone thrust this bit of paper in my hand, and on it is Meng's writing, saying, 'You are not to look for me or be anxious, and my parents need not think of me again. I am safe and where I want to be.'" Sheng laughed and set down the empty bowl and struck a match to light a cigarette, and he said gaily to Yuan, "I have not even relished smoking these 3 days. Well, that young rascal who is my brother is safe enough, and I have told my father, and though the old man is angry and swears he will not have Meng ever be as his son again, still I know by now he has let down his heart and gone to a feast tonight, and my elder brother will be at the theater to see a new piece put on with a woman acting in her own right in this new fashion, and not a man dressed as a woman, for he is all agog to see the vileness in it. And my mother has been angry at my father for a while, and so we are all ourselves again, now that Meng is safe and you and I are escaped." He smoked a little, and then he said, more gravely than his wont was, "But, Yuan, I am glad that we are going to other parts, even though we go like this. I say little of it, and I will not join in any cause, and I take my pleasure where I can. But I am weary of my country and its wars, and though you all think me a smiling, laughing fellow only thinking of my verses, yet the truth is I am very often sad and hopeless. I am glad to go and see another country, and know how its people live. I feel my heart lift just to be going away." But even as he talked, Yuan could listen no more. The comfort of the food and the softness of this narrow, swinging bed, and the knowledge of his freedom covered him with comfort. He could only smile a little, and he felt his eyes begin to close. Sheng saw it too, and he said very kindly, "Sleep. Your mother said I was to let you sleep and sleep, and you may sleep better than you ever have, now you are free." Yuan opened his eyes once more at this word. Free. Yes, he was free of everything at last. And then Sheng said once more, to finish out his thought, "And if you are like me, there is nothing much you do not want to leave." No, Yuan thought, slipping into sleep. There was nothing he grieved to leave behind him. At this instant of his sleep, he saw again that crowded cell, those writhing forms, those knights. There was that maid turning to look at him before she went to die. He dropped his mind away and fell into sleep. And then, suddenly in a great peace, he dreamed he was on his bit of land. There was the little piece of land he had planted. He saw it suddenly as clear as any picture. The peas were forming in their pods, and the green-bearded barley was coming to its height. And there was that old laughing farmer, working next upon his own fields. But here the maid was too, and now her hand was very cold, very cold. Her hand was so cold he woke again a little, and remembered he was free. What had Sheng said, that he was not sorry? No, the only thing he minded leaving was that little piece of land. And then, before Yuan slept, there came this comfort to him. "But that land, it is one thing that will still be there when I come back. Land is always there." Part 2, Chapter 13. Wang Yuan was in the 20th year of his age when he went away from his own country, but in many ways a boy still and full of dreams and confusions and plans half begun which he did not know how to finish, or even if he wanted to finish them. He had all his long life been guarded and watched over and cared for by someone, and he did not know any other thing than such care. And for all his 3 days in that cell, he did not know what sorrow truly was. He stayed 6 years away. When he made ready to return again to his country in the summer of that year, he was near to his 26th birthday, and he was a man in many things, though no sorrow had yet come to put the final shape of manhood on him. But this he did not know he needed. If any had asked him, he would have said steadfastly, "I am a man. I know my own mind. I know what I want to do. My dreams are plans now. I have finished my years at school. I am ready for my life in my own country." And indeed, to Yuan, these 6 years in foreign parts were like another half of his life. The early 19 years were the first, lesser half, and the 6 were the greater, more valuable ones. For these years had taken him and set him fast in certain ways. But the truth was, although he did not know it, he was set in many ways of which he was not himself aware. If any had asked him, "How are you ready now to live your life?" he would have answered honestly, "I have a degree of learning from a great foreign college, and I took that degree above many who are native to the land." This he would have said proudly, but he would not have told of a certain memory he had, that there were those among his fellows and this foreign people who muttered against him, saying, "Of course, if a man wants to be nothing but a grind, he can carry off the honors and grades, but we owe more to the school than that. This fellow, he grinds at his books, and that is all. He takes no part in the life. Where would the school be in football and in the boat races if we all did it?" Yes, Yuan knew these pushing, crowding, merry foreign youths who so spoke of him, and they took no great pains to hide the words, but said them in the halls. But Yuan held his head high. He was secure in the praise of his teachers and in the mention he received at times of prize-giving, when his name often came the first, and always it was said by the one who gave the prize, "Although he works in a language foreign to him, he has surpassed the others." So, although Yuan knew he was not loved for this, he had gone proudly on, and he was glad to show what his race could do, and glad to show them that he did not value games so high as children did. If again one had asked him, "How are you ready now to live your man's life?" he would have answered, "I have read many hundreds of books, and I have searched to find out all I could from this foreign nation." And this was true, for in these 6 years Yuan lived as lone as a thrush in a cage. Every morning he rose early and read his books, and when a bell rang in the house where he lived, he went downstairs and took his breakfast, eating usually in silence, for he did not trouble to talk much to any other in that house, nor to the woman whose it was. And why should he waste himself in speech with them? At noon he took his meal among the many students in the vast hall there was for this purpose, and in the afternoons, if he had not work in the field or with his teachers, he did what he loved most to do. He went into the great hall of books and sat among the books, and read and wrote down what he would keep, and pondered on many things. In these hours he was forced to discover that these Western peoples were not, as Meng had cried so bitterly, a savage race, in spite of the rudeness of the common people, and they were learned in sciences. Many times Yuan heard his own countrymen in this foreign country say that in the use and knowledge of materials these folk excelled, but in all the arts whereby men's spirits live, they lacked. Yet now, looking at the rooms of books which were all of philosophy, or all of poetry, or all of art, Yuan wondered if even his own people were greater, though he would have died before he spoke such a wonder aloud in this foreign land. He even found translated into Western tongues the sayings of the earlier and later sages of his own people, and books which told of arts of the East, and he was aghast at all this learning, and half he was envious of these people who possessed it, and half he hated them for it, and he did not like to remember that in his own country a common man often could not read a book, and less often could his wife. Yuan had been of two different minds since he came to this foreign country. When he grew well upon the ship and felt his forces come back into him after those 3 days of death, he was glad to live again. Then, as he grew glad to live, he caught from Sheng his pleasure in the travel, and in all the new sights they would see, and in the greatness of the foreign lands. So Yuan had entered upon the new shores as eager as any child to see a show, and ready to be pleased by everything. And he found everything to please. When first he entered into the great port city on this new country's western coast, It seemed to him that all he ever heard was more than true. The houses were higher than he had heard, and the streets were tiled and paved, like floors of houses, and clean enough to sit on or to sleep on and not be soiled. And all the people seemed most wonderfully clean. The whiteness of their skins and the cleanness of their garments were very pleasing to see, and they all seemed rich and fed. And Yuen was glad, because here at least the poor were not mingled among the rich. Here the rich came and went most freely on the streets, and no beggars plucked at their sleeves and cried out for mercy and a little silver. It was such a country as could be enjoyed, for all had enough, and one could eat with joy, because all so ate. Thus Yuen and Sheng together in those first days could not but cry at much beauty to be seen, for these people lived in palaces, or so it seemed to these two young men who had not seen such homes. In this city, away from the shops, the streets stretched wide and shaded by great trees, and families needed not to build high walls about them, but each grassy garden ran into the next man's. And this was a marvel to Yuen and Sheng, because it seemed every man so trusted his neighbor that he needed not to build against him or his thievery. Thus at first all seemed perfect in that city. The great square high buildings were cut so clean against the blue metallic sky that they seemed mighty temples, only there were no gods inside. And between these ran at great speed the thousand vehicles of that city, all filled with rich men and their ladies, although even the people who went on foot seemed to do it out of joy and not because they must. At first Yuen had said to Sheng, "There must be something wrong here in this city, that so many people go at such speed somewhere." But when he and Sheng had looked a while, they perceived that these people looked very gay, and often laughed, and their high, clacking speech was more merry than it was mournful, and there was no trouble anywhere, and they went quickly because they loved swiftness. Such was their temper. And indeed, there was here a strange power in the very air and sunshine. Where in Yuen's mother country the air was often somnolent and soothing, so that in summer one must sleep long, and in winter one wished only to curl into a close space for sleep and warmth. In this new country the winds and sunshine were filled with a wild, driving energy, so that Yuen and Sheng walked more quickly than their wont was, and in the beaming light the people moved like shining, mingled motes, driven through the sunshine. Yet already in those earliest 2 days when all was strange to them and all to be enjoyed, Yuen found his pleasure checked by a certain moment. Even now, after 6 years were gone, Yuen could not say he had forgot that moment wholly, though it was a small thing, too. The second day upon the shore he and Sheng went into a certain common restaurant where many ate, and there were people not rich as some, perhaps, but still well enough to eat as they chose. When Yuen and Sheng passed through the doors from the street, Yuen felt, or thought he did, that these white men and women stared somewhat at him and at Sheng, and he thought they drew a little off from them, though the truth was Yuen was glad they did, because there was about them a strange alien odor, a little like a certain curd of milk they loved to eat, though not so foul, perhaps. When they went into that place to eat, a maid standing at a counter took their hats from them to hang among many others, for so the custom was, and when they came back to claim them, this maid put many hats out at a time, and a certain man before Yuen could stay him reached out his hand and seized on Yuen's hat, which was of a brown hue like his own, and he pressed it on his head and ran out of the door. At once Yuen saw what was the mistake, and hastening after, he said with courtesy, "Sir, here is your hat. Mine, which is the inferior one, you have taken by mistake. It is my fault. I was so slow." And then Yuen bowed and held forth the other's hat. But the man, who was no longer young, and who wore an anxious, sharp look upon his thin face, listened with impatience to Yuen's speech. And now he seized his own hat, and with great distaste removed from his bald head Yuen's hat. Nor did he stop except to say two words, and these he spat forth. Thus Yuen was left standing holding his hat, and wishing he need not set it on his head again, for he had not liked the man's shining white pate, and most of all he did not like the hiss of the man's voice. When Sheng came up, he asked Yuen, Why do you stand as though you had been struck?
That man, said Yuan, struck me with two words I did not understand, except I know they were evil.
At this, Sheng laughed, but there was an edge of light bitterness in his laughter.
It may be he called you foreign devil, he said.
Two evil words they were, I know, said Yuan,
troubled, and beginning to be less joyful.
We are now foreigners, said Sheng,
and after a while he shrugged himself and said again,
All countries are alike, my cousin.
Yuan said nothing, but he was not again so joyful and not so wholly pleased again with anything he saw. Inside he gathered steadfastly his own self, stubborn and resistant. He, Yuan, son of Wang the Tiger, grandson of Wang Lung, would remain himself forever, never lost in any millions of white alien men. That day he could not forget his hurt, until Sheng saw it again and laughed, and said with a little smile of malice,
Do not forget that in our country Meng would have cried at that little man that he was a foreign devil, so the hurt might have been the other way.
And after a while he told Yuan to look at this strange sight or that, until he had diverted Yuan at last. In the next days and in all the years to come, when there was so much to see and to make wonder over, he would have said he had forgotten that small one thing, except he had not. As clearly today, if he happened to take thought of it, as he had 6 years ago, he saw that man's angry look, and he could still feel the wound, which seemed to him unjust. But if he had not forgotten, yet the memory was often buried. For Yuan and Sheng together saw much beauty in those first days in the foreign country. They rode on a train which bore them through great mountains where, although spring was warm upon the foothills, yet snow was white and thick against the high blue skies, and between these mountains there were black gorges where deep waters foamed and frothed, and Yuan, staring down at all this mad beauty, felt it almost too much and scarcely real, but like some wild painter's picture hung there beneath the train, foreign and strange and too sharply colored, and not made of earth and rocks and water of which his own country was compounded. When the mountains were behind them, there were valleys as extravagant and fields big enough to be counties, and machines struggling like huge beasts to make ready the fertile earth for gigantic harvests. Yuan saw it very clearly, and this was even more a marvel to him than the mountains. He stared at the great machines, and he remembered how the old farmer had taught him to hold a hoe and fling it so it fell true to its set place. So did that farmer still till his land, and so did others like him. And Yuan remembered how the farmer's little fields were made, each neatly fitted to the other, and how his few vegetables grew green and heavy with the human wastes he saved and poured on them, so that every plant grew to its richest best, and every plant and every foot of land had its full value. But here none could take thought of single plants and any foot of land. Here fields were measured by the mile, and plants unnumbered, doubtless. Thus in those first days everything except that one man's words seemed good to Yuan, and better than anything in his own country could be. The villages were clean and very prosperous, and although he could recognize the different look of a man upon the land and a man who lived in any town, still the man upon the land did not go ragged in his coat, and the houses on this land were never made of earth and thatch, nor did the fowls and pigs stray as they would. These were all things to admire, or so Yuan thought. Yet from those first days even Yuan felt the earth here strange and wild, and not like his own earth. For as time passed and Yuan knew better what that earth was from walking often along country roads, or tilling a piece for himself in the foreign school even as he had in his own country, he never could forget the difference. Though the earth which fed these white folk was the same earth which had fed Yuan's race too, yet working on it, Yuan knew it was not the very earth in which his forefathers were buried. This earth was fresh and free of human bones, and not so tamed, since of this new race not yet enough were dead to saturate the soil with their essences, as Yuan knew the soil of his own country was saturated with its own humanity. This earth was still stronger than the people who strove to possess it, and they were wild through its wildness, and in spite of wealth and learning, often savage in their spirits and their looks. For the earth was uncaptured. The miles of wooded mountains, all the waste of fallen logs and rotting leaves beneath great trees ungarnered. The lands let free to grass and pasture for beasts. The carelessness of wide roads running everywhere. These showed forth the unconquered land. Men used what they wanted. They brought forth great groaning harvests, more than they could sell. They cut down trees and used only the fields that were best and left the others to waste. And still the land was more than they could use, and greater still than they. In Yuan's own country the land was conquered, and men were the masters. There the mountains were stripped of their forests and years long past, and in these present times were shaven even of the wild grasses to feed the fires of men. And men coaxed the fullest harvests from the tiny fields they had, and forced the land to labor for them for its fullest. And into the land again they poured themselves, their sweat, their wastes, their dead bodies, until there was no more virginity left in it. Men made the soil out of themselves, and without them the earth would have been long since exhausted, and but an empty, barren womb. So Yuan felt when he mused over this new country, and what its secret was. On his own bit of land he thought first of what he had to put in before he could have hope of harvest. Here this foreign earth was enriched still by its own unused strength. For a little put in it gave forth greatly, leaping into life too strong for men. When did Yuan come to mingle hatred in this admiration? At the end of 6 years he could look back and see the second step he took in hatred. Yuan and Sheng parted early, and at the end of that first journey on the train, for Sheng fell into love of a great city where he found others of his own kind, and he said the schools there were better for such as he was who loved to learn of verse and music and of philosophies, and he cared nothing for the land as Yuan did. For Yuan set his heart to do in this foreign country what he had always hoped to do, to learn how to breed plants, and how to till the soil and all such things. And the more steadfastly because he soon believed this people owed their power to their wealth of harvest from the land. So Yuan left Sheng behind in that city, and he went on into another town, into another school, where he could have what he wanted. First of all, Yuan must find himself a place to eat and sleep, and a room to call his home in this strange land. When he went to the school, he was met courteously enough by a gray-haired white man, who gave him lists of certain places where he might be housed and fed, and Yuan set forth to find the best one. The very first door at which he rang a bell was opened to him, and there stood a huge woman, one no longer young, and wiping her great bare red arms upon an apron that she wore about her vast middle. Now Yuan had never seen a woman shaped like this one, and he could not bear her looks at this first instant, but he asked very courteously, "Is the master of this house at home?" Then this female set her two hands on her thighs, and she answered in a very loud-mouthed, heavy way, "It's my house, and there is no man who owns it." At this Yuan turned to go away, for he thought he would rather try another place than this, thinking there must not be many even in this land so hideous as this woman, and he would rather live in a house where a man was. For this woman was truly more than could be believed. Her girth and bosom were enormous, and on her head was short hair of a hue Yuan thought could not have grown from human skin except he saw it. It was a bright reddish-yellow color, dulled somewhat with kitchen grease and smoke. Beneath this strange hair her round, fat face shone forth, a red again, but now of a different, purplish red, and in this visage were set two small, sharp eyes as blue and bright as new porcelain is sometimes. He could not bear to see her, and he let his eyes fall, and then he saw her two spreading, shapeless feet, and those he could not bear either, and he made haste away, and after a courtesy turned to go elsewhere. Nevertheless, when he had asked at another door or two where it was marked there were rooms for lodgers, he found himself refused. At first he did not know the reason why. One woman said, "My rooms are taken." Although Yuan knew she lied, seeing that her sign of empty rooms was there. And so it was again and yet again.
At last, the truth was shown him. A man said bluntly, "We don't take any colored people here." At first, Yuan did not know what was meant, not thinking of his pale yellow skin as being other than the usual hue of human flesh, nor his black eyes and hair what men's hair and eyes might always be. But in a moment he understood, for he had seen black men here and there about this country, and marked how they were not held in high respect by white ones. Up from his heart the blood rushed, and the man, seeing his face darken and glow, said half an apology, "My wife has to help me in making our way in these hard times, and we have regular boarders, and they wouldn't stay if we was to bring in foreigners. There's places where they do take them, though." And the man named the number of the house and street where Yuan had seen the hideous female. This was the second step in hatred. He thanked the man, therefore, with deep, proud courtesy, and he went back again to that first house, and averting his eyes from her dreadful person, he told the woman he would see the room she had. The room he liked well enough, a small upper room against the roof, very clean, and cut off by a stairway. If he could forget the woman, this room seemed well enough. He could see himself there quietly at work, alone, and he liked the look of the roofs sloping down about the bed and table, and the chair and chest it held. So he chose to stay in it, and this room was his home for the 6 years. And the truth was, the woman was not so ill as her looks, and he lived in her house year after year, while he went to that school, and the woman grew kind to him, and he came to understand her kindness, covered as it was by her hideous looks and coarse ways. In his room he lived as sparsely and as neatly as a priest, his few possessions always placed exactly, and this woman came to like him well, and she sighed her gusty sigh and said, "If all my boys was like you, Wang, and as little trouble in their ways, I'd be a different woman now." Then he found, as a few days went by, that this burly female creature was very kind in her loud way. Although Yuan cringed before the sound of her great voice, and shivered at the sight of her thick red arms bared to her shoulders, still he thanked her truly when he found some apples put in his room, and he knew she meant kindness when she shouted at him across the table where they ate, "I cooked some rice for you, Mr. Wang. I reckon you find it hard eating without what you're used to." And then she laughed freely and roared, "But rice is the best I can do. Snails and rats and dogs and all them things you eat I can't supply." She did not seem to hear Yuan's protest that indeed he did not eat these things at home, and after a while he learned to smile in silence when she made one of her jokes, and he remembered at such times, he made himself remember, that she pressed food on him more than he could eat, and kept his room warm and clean, and when she knew he liked a certain dish, she went to some pains to make it for him. At last he learned never to look into her face, which still he found hideous, and he learned to think only of her kindness, and this the more when he found, as time passed by, and he came to know a few others of his countrymen in this town, circumstanced as he was, that there were many less good than she in lodging houses, women of acrid tongues and sparing of their food at table, and scornful of a race other than their own. Yet when he thought of it, here was the strangest thing of all to Yuan, that this gross, loud-mouthed woman once had been wed. In his own land it might have been no wonder, for there youths and maidens wed whom they must before the new times came, and a man must take what was given him, even though it were an ugly wife. But in this foreign land for long there had been choosing of maid by the man himself. So once then was this woman chosen freely by a man, and by him before he died she had a child, a girl, now 17 or so in age, who lived with her still. And here was another strange thing. The girl was beautiful. Yuan, who never thought a white woman could be truly beautiful, knew well enough this maid, in spite of all her fairness, must be called beautiful. For she had taken her mother's wiry, flaming hair and changed it by some youthful magic in herself into the softest, curling, coppery stuff, cut short, but winding all about the shape of her pretty head and her white neck. And her mother's eyes she had, but softer, darker, and larger, and she used a little art to tinge her brows and lashes brown instead of pale, as her mother's were. Her lips, too, were soft and full and very red, and her body slender as a young tree. And her hands were slender, not thick anywhere, and the nails long and painted red. She wore, and Yuen saw it, was all the young men saw it, garments of such frail stuff that her narrow hips and little breasts and all the moving lines of her body showed through. And well she knew the young men saw and what Yuen saw. And when Yuen knew she knew it, he felt a strange fear of her and even a dislike, so that he held himself aloof and would not do more than bow in answer to a greeting she might give. He was glad her voice was not lovely. He liked a low, sweet voice, and hers was not low or sweet. Whatever she said was said too loudly and too sharply in her nose, and when he was afraid because he felt the softness of her look, or if by chance when he took seat at table, where she sat beside him, his eyes fell on the whiteness of her neck, he was glad he did not like her voice. And after a while he sought and found other things he did not like too. She would not help her mother in the house, and when her mother asked her at mealtimes to fetch a thing forgotten from the table, she rose pouting and often saying, "You can never set the table, Ma, and not forget something." Nor would she put her hands in water that was soiled with grease or dirt, because she valued her hands so much for beauty. And all these 6 years Yuen was glad of her ways he did not like, and kept them always clearly before him. He could look at her pretty, restless hands beside him, and remember they were idle hands that did not serve another than herself, and so ought not maids' hands to be. And though he could not, roused as he once had been, avoid the knowledge sometimes of her nearness, yet he could remember the first 2 words he ever heard upon this foreign earth. He was foreign to this maid, too. Remembering, he could remember that their 2 kinds of flesh, his and this maid's, were alien to each other, and he was set to be content to hold himself aloof and go his solitary way. No, he told himself, he had had enough of maids, he who was betrayed. And if he were betrayed here in a foreign land, there would be none to help him. No, better that he stay away from maids. So he would not see the maid, and he learned never to look where her bosom was, and sedulously he refused to go with her if she begged it to some dancing place, for she was bold to invite him sometimes. Yet there were nights when he could not sleep. He lay in his bed and remembered the dead maid, and he wondered sadly, yet with a thrilling wonder too, what it was that burned so hot between a man and maid in any country. It was an idle wonder, since he never knew her, and she turned so wicked in the end. On moonlit nights especially he could not sleep. And when at last he did sleep, he woke, and then perhaps again, to lie and watch the silent, dancing shadows of a tree's branch against the white wall of his room, shining, for the moon was bright. He turned restlessly at last, and hid his eyes and thought, "I wish the moon did not shine so clear. It makes me long for something, as though for some home I never had." For these 6 years were years of great solitude for Yuen. Day by day he shut himself away into greater solitude. Outwardly he was courteous and spoke to all who spoke to him, but to none did he give greeting first. Day by day he shut himself away from what he did not want in this new country. His native pride, the silent pride of men old before the Western world began to take its full shape in him. He learned to bear silently a foolish, curious stare upon the street. He learned what shops he could enter in that small town to buy his necessities, or to have himself shaved or his hair cut. For there were keepers of shops who would not serve him, some refusing bluntly or some asking twice the value of goods, or some saying with a semblance of courtesy, "We have our living to make here, and we do not encourage trade with foreigners." And Yuen learned to answer nothing, whether to coarseness or to courtesy. He could live days without speech to anyone, and it came to be that he might have been like a stranger lost in all this rushing foreign life. For not often did anyone even ask a question of him of his own country.
These white men and women lived so enwrapped within themselves that they never cared to know what others did. Or if they heard a difference, they smiled tolerantly, as one may at those who do not do so well from ignorance. A few set thoughts Yuen found his schoolfellows had, or the barber who cut his hair, or the woman in whose house he lodged. Such as that Yuen and all his countrymen ate rats and snakes and smoked opium, or that all his countrywomen bound their feet, or that all his countrymen wore hair braided into queues. At first Yuen in great eagerness tried to set these ignorances right. He swore he had not tasted either rat or snake, and he told of Ilon and her friends who danced as lightly free as any maidens could. But it was no use, for what he said they soon forgot and remembered only the same things. Yet there was this result to Yuen, that so deep and often his anger rose against this ignorance, that at last he began to forget there was any rightness or truth in anything they said. And he came to believe that all his country was like the coastal city, and that all maidens were like Ilon. Chapter 14. There was a certain schoolfellow he had in two of his classes where he learned of the soil, and this young man was a farmer's son, a lout of a very kind heart, and amiable to everyone. Yuen had not spoken to him when he dropped into the seat beside him at a class, but the youth spoke first, and when he walked sometimes with Yuen away from the door, and then sometimes lingered in the sunshine and talked a little while with him. And then one day he asked Yuen to walk with him. Yuen had never met with such kindness yet, and he went and it was sweeter to him than he knew, because he lived so solitary. Soon Yuen found himself telling his own story to this friend he had found. Together they sat down and rested under a tree bent over the roadside, and they talked on, and very soon the lad cried out impetuously, "Say, call me Jim. What's your name?" "Wang? Yuen Wang? Mine's Barnes, Jim Barnes." Then Yuen explained how in his country the family name came first, for it gave him the strangest reversed feeling to hear his own name called out first, as this lad now did. And this amused the lad again, and he tried his own names backwards, and laughed aloud. In such small talk and frequent laughter their friendship grew, and led to other talk. And Jim told Yuen how he had lived upon a farm his whole life, and when he said, "My father's farm has about 200 acres, Yuen said, "He must be very rich." And then Jim looked at him surprised and said, "That's only a small farm here. Would it be big in your country?" To this Yuen did not answer straightly. He suddenly could not bear to say how small a farm was in his country, dreading the other's scorn, and so he only said, "My grandfather had greater lands, and he was called a rich man, but our fields are very fertile, and a man needs fewer of them to live upon." And so through such talk he passed to telling of the great house in the town, and of his father Wang the Tiger, whom he now called a general and not a lord of war. And he told of the coastal city, and of the lady and Ilon his sister, and of the modern pleasures Ilon had. And day after day Jim listened and pressed his questions, and Yuen talked, scarcely knowing that he said so much. But Yuen found it sweet to talk. He had been very lonely in this foreign country, more lonely than he knew. And the small slights put on him, which, if he had been asked, he would have said proudly were nothing to him, yet were something to him. Again and again his pride had been stabbed, and he was not used to it. Now it eased him to sit and tell this white lad all the glories of his race, and of his family and his nation. It was a balm to all his wounds to see Jim's eyes grow large and full of wonder, and to hear him say most humbly, "We must look pretty poor to you, a general's son and all, and all those servants, and I'd like to ask you home with me this summer, but I don't know as I dare, after all you've had." Then Yuen thanked him courteously, and with courtesy said, "I am sure your father's house would be very large and pleasant to me." And he drank in with pleasure the other's admiration. But here was the secret fruit in Yuen of all this talk. He came himself, without his knowing it, to see his country as he said it was. He forgot that he had hated Wang the Tiger's wars and all his lusty soldiery, and he came to think of the tiger as a great noble general sitting in his halls. And he forgot the humble little village where Wang Lung lived and starved and struggled up by labor and by guile, and he only remembered from his childhood the many courts of that great house in the town, which his grandfather had made. He forgot even the small old earthen house and all the millions like it, shaped out of earth and thatched with straw, and housing poor folk and sometimes even beasts with them. And he remembered clearly only the coastal town and all its riches and its pleasure houses. So when Jim asked, "Have you automobiles like we have?" or if he asked, "Do you have houses like ours?" Yuan answered simply, "Yes. We have all these things." Nor did he lie. In a measure he spoke the truth, and in a full measure he believed he spoke the whole truth, because as days passed, his own distant country grew more perfect in his eyes. He forgot everything not beautiful, miseries such as are to be found anywhere, and it seemed to him that only in his country were the men upon the land all honest and content, and all the serving men loyal, and all masters kind, and all children filial, and all maids virtuous and full of modesty. So much did Yuan come to believe thus in his own distant country, that one day by force of his own belief he was driven to say publicly a thing in her defense. It happened that to this town and to a certain temple in it, which was called a church, there came a white man who had lived in Yuan's country, and announced he would show pictures of that far place, and tell of its people and their habits. Now Yuan, since he believed in no religion, had never been to this foreign temple. But on this night he went, thinking to hear the man and see what he might show. In the crowd then Yuan sat. From the first sight of the traveler Yuan did not like him, for he perceived him to be a priest of a sort of whom he had heard but had not seen, and one of those against whom he had been taught in his early school of war, who went abroad with religion as a trade, and enticed humble folk into his sect for some secret